the cowherd boys, and even the Aborigine Pulinda women desire, the touch of the dusty leaves on the plants and grass as he tends his cows. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti reminds us of the jealous rivalry that always existed between the queens of Dwarka and the gopis of Braja. The gopis considered the sophisticated women of Dwarka the most serious threat to their hold on Sri Krishna. Confessing their anxiety to Uddhava, Kasmat Krishna Ihayati Prapta Rajo Hatahitaha Narendra Kanya Udbahya. Why should Krishna come back here after winning a kingdom, killing his enemies, and marrying the daughters of kings? Bhagavatam 10:47-45. Rukmini and her seven chief co-wives considered themselves so fortunate in their relationship with Krishna, as he appeared in Dwarka, that they did not especially desire to see him as he is in Vrindavan. Sri Radha's super excellent quality, But the 16,000 lesser queens, after hearing Uddhava describe Sri Radha's super excellent qualities, became attracted to touch the dust that falls from Krishna's feet onto the grass and plants of Vrindavan. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti indicates that some commentators give this as the reason why, after the Maushala Leela, these 16,000 queens were stolen from Arjuna on the road by Lord Krishna himself in the disguise of 16,000 cowherds, who then took them away to Gokula. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 83rd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Draupadi Meets the Queens of Krishna. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Rajastriyo yadvanchanti pulindyastrina virudaha bhavascharyato gopaha padasparsha mahatmanaha. We desire the same contact with the Supreme Lord's feet that the young women of Braja, the cowherd boys, and even the Aborigine Pulinda women desire, the touch of the dust he leaves on the plants and grass as he tends his cows. We're at the end of this wonderful chapter, hearing from Krishna's queens. Here's a review of the names of this first of the eight primary queens, in case you don't remember them. Rukmini is, of course, the chief queen. Then Satyabhama, then Jambavati, then Kalindi, Mitravinda, Satya, Bhadra, and Lakshmana. And now we're hearing from Rohini, who's representing the 16,100 queens who had been kidnapped by Bhaumasura, and then are now Krishna's wives. So here we hear three different groups in Braja are eager to get this, the way it's described here, the touch of the dust he leaves, Krishna leaves, on the plants and grass as he tends his cows. So this is desired by the Braja Striya, that means the gopis. Striya, of course, means women, the women of Braja. The Pulindyas, they're the Aborigine women, or I think probably calls them the lusty Aborigine women in the Krishna book. And the cowherd boys. So that the gopis appear in this list is not surprising, of course. The gopis want anything related to Krishna. I thought it was a little surprising that the Cowherd Boys want the dust of Krishna's feet, because we usually don't think of the Cowherd Boys in that relationship with Krishna. They're playing with Krishna as a friend. Of course, they're focused on Krishna. They want to be the one to touch Krishna first. They want to be the one right there with Krishna. And Krishna reciprocates in such a way that they each feel that Krishna's with them. It's like there may be a group, there's one chief voice, everyone wants to be his friend. They want to be the best friend. Little kids, they're always growing up, she's my best friend, or he's my best friend. They always have best friends. So for the Cowherd Boys, Krishna's everyone's best friend, and they all feel like they're his best friend. That's, of course, Krishna's inconceivable potency that he can do that. But at the same time, we see here there, the Cowherd Boys, they want the dust of Krishna's feet. In the Nectar of Devotion, and we have the different rasas are described there. So here's a little something about Cowherd Boys, one verse from the Nectar of Devotion. But for example, we always hear also about the gopis, when Krishna left Vrindavan, this is a repeated theme that we hear, how they were suffering so much in separation. But of course it wasn't only the gopis, it was everyone in Vrindavan. And not only those in human form, but those in any form, the stones and the trees and everything in Vrindavan was dying in separation from Krishna. So this is something, the Cowherd Boys, it says, when Krishna was absent from Vrindavan, all the Cowherd Boys became bewildered. And having given up all kinds of activities, they appeared to be mad and forgot all their regular business. They were sometimes lying down on the ground, sometimes rolling in the dust, sometimes laughing, and sometimes running very swiftly. All of these symptoms gave them the appearance of madmen. So then, of course, then the Pulindya women. So in a previous verse, there's a description of the Pulindya women, or the Pulindas. Of course, their name appears in that verse, Kirata Hunandra, Pulinda Pulkasha, Birashumba, Yavanaka Sadaya, all the uncivilized races who can also become Krishna conscious by getting the mercy of the pure devotees of the Lord. So the Aboriginal woman, it says in this verse from the 21st chapter of 10th canto, they're also called Shabaras. You may be familiar with this word, Shabara. The attendants of Lord Jagannath are descendants of the Shabaras. Prabhupada describes as a caste that keeps and sells pigs. But generally it's a generic word that means forest dwellers. The people that, the tribes that live in the forest, they're considered uncivilized, they live in the forest. So Aborigine tribes, the Pulinda, the Shabaras and Pulindas, the same. So here it says, the Aborigine women of Vrindavan area became disturbed by lust. Oh, this is the verse, actually. It's described how they reacted to Krishna's, the dust from Krishna's feet. The Aborigine women of the Vrindavan area became disturbed by lust, become disturbed by lust, when they see the grass marked with reddish kumkum powder, endowed with the color of Krishna's lotus feet. This powder originally decorated the breasts of his beloveds. And when the Aboriginal women smear it on their faces and breasts, they feel fully satisfied and give up all their anxiety. And then there's another, this is from the third canto, or Uddhava, you know, is this Uddhava? I guess it is, chapter 7. Anyway, Uddhava's talking about Krishna's pastimes. So he mentions, the Aboriginal women of Vrindavan area became disturbed by lust. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, this is the same. Okay. How did I get these two mixed up? Okay, there's a commentary here. This is a commentary. This is actually from the 10th canto. Commentary on this verse about the Pulinda women. The human beings in Vraja, of course, are more exalted than the lower forms of life. In this verse, actually I think this is from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Bhagavatam 10:21-17, one gopi glorifies, oh yes, this is a very long purport actually. Before I dive into it, I'll warn you. This is from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Got my notes mixed up here. So this is from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. At the end of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami quotes verse after verse, something like 100 verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially about Krishna and Vrindavan. So in the context of it, when he's reciting all these verses, writing all these verses, so this is one of them about the Aborigine women, the one that I just read, how they smear their faces and their breasts with the dust from the gopis. So this is the commentary, which means this is Sanatana Goswami's commentary on his own work, which is essentially what Gopi Pranadan Prabhu has done in his commentary on the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. He's basically just paraphrased Sanatana Goswami's commentary. So there's a lot of interesting information here. I think this is very, of course, these are very elevated topics. Now we're in the 10th canto, so we're talking about smearing, you know, the dust from the breasts of the gopis which hold Krishna's feet. So very erotic literature. One thing I was thinking about in these pastimes of Krishna, Prabhupada often says that, you know, who can understand Krishna? How can we understand Krishna? And I was thinking, in certain ways, of course, we understand perfectly well what's going on here, because these are the same kinds of things that we experience in the material world. In other words, Krishna's relationships with devotees are understandable in a certain way. What Prabhupada is warning us about is, don't think that these are ordinary material affairs. But from the point of view of psychology, we can understand it perfectly well. These things make sense. It's not that God is just some bizarre person, just does really crazy, wacky out things. Right? He does ordinary things in his romantic relationships. In fact, Rupa Goswami, he essentially bases the Nectar of Devotion on the writings of Bharat Muni, who Prabhupada says is the expert, actually he calls him a few things. He's an expert poet, expert dramatist, and he's also an expert sexologist, Prabhupada calls him, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So he knows about sexual affairs or amorous affairs or romantic affairs. And his understanding of those things, of course, he portrayed these romantic affairs in drama, in plays. So Rupa Goswami basically took this whole, his study, Bharat Muni's study of the relationships, especially conjugal relationship, amorous relationship, and he showed how Krishna does all these things. He interacts with the gopis according to these. But when you read in Chaitanya Charitamrita these lists of the different ecstasies and right wing and left wing and all these kinds of things, they really come from Bharat Muni. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that Krishna inspired Bharat Muni to write all of these things so that the Goswamis later could pick them up and use them as sort of a template for explaining Krishna's pastimes. So we say we can't understand Krishna. Well, in a certain way, we can understand, because it's reasonable how he does. The feelings of separation, we can relate to it because we understand, yes, if you love someone so much and they leave, you're heartbroken and so on. So all of these things make sense to us. So in any case, this is for the commentary, Sanatana Goswami's commentary on this verse about the Aborigine women. It's quite long, but it has some interesting points. Just like this purport today, I thought it's quite interesting. I just mentioned it just to review in the purport. This idea that the eight principal gopis, they weren't attracted to go to Vrindavan because they were so fulfilled, I guess the idea is, in their relationship with Krishna and satisfied, that they didn't think they, in one sense, they may have looked down on the gopis of Vrindavan. Of course, they themselves were gopis, but playing a different role. But at least in that rustle, in that mood, they weren't attracted by it. But these other 16,100 gopis, they were attracted when they heard. It says that Uddhava, when they heard from Uddhava about Radha. Now it doesn't explain here where that happened. Somehow at some point, Uddhava explained to the queens in Dwarka about Radharani, Vrindavan Leela. So these queens were attracted, but the other eight, the original eight, they weren't attracted. So then we hear how Krishna kidnapped them, disguised as cowherd men. And it says 16,000 cowherds. That was a little piece of information I don't think I heard before. There were 16,000 to capture the 16,000 queens and take them to Gokul. Of course, this mention of Arjuna, it says, stolen from Arjuna. There's that wonderful chapter the Pandavas retire timely. The disappearance of Lord Krishna and the Pandavas retire timely. They come together in the first canto. So Yudhisthira is seeing Arjuna's away in Dwarka to see what's happening with Krishna there. He's gone to visit him. And Yudhisthira is starting to see these bad omens. Bolts from the lightning in the sky when there's no clouds, and all this whole list of inauspicious things. So he's worried. So of course, when Arjuna comes back, then he describes, how he's separated from Krishna. And that's why he's so heartbroken. So I remember years ago, the Vaikuntha players, they did the play of this, the Pandavas retire timely, the disappearance of Lord Krishna. I saw it in New York. It was so moving. This scene of Arjuna, where he's listing all of these things. And I'm Arjuna. I carried a Gandiva bow, and I did this, and I did this, and I did this. All because of Krishna, but now he's left me. I've been defeated by a band of infidel coward men. I've lost everything. So this is what happened. Coward, here Arjuna, he can kill great Maharathas. And now the idea is they have these little wooden bows in there, like kids' toys practically, for Arjuna. And he's lost in a battle to them. Why? Because Krishna's gone. My power is gone. Krishna left. My power has been withdrawn. So now I get on with this commentary here. The human beings in Vrindavan, the reason this says, of course, the human beings in Vraja, of course, are more exalted than the lower forms, because before this there are some verses glorifying other entities in Vrindavan. The human beings in Vraja, of course, are more exalted than the lower forms of life. In this verse, Bhagavatam 10:21-17, one gopi first glorifies the outcast women who dwell in the forest. The Palindas are an aborigine tribe living in Vraja. They are also known as Shabaras. Referring to them also implies other tribes of Vraja, including the Dhola tribe. The low-caste Palinda women felt fully satisfied, poor Naha, when they smeared themselves with the effulgently red kumkum that came from the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, Urugaya, who plays his flute, Gayati, in many wonderful ways, Urudha. That's an interesting translation of Urugaya, who plays his flute, Gayati, in many wonderful ways, Urudha. As soon as they smeared this cosmetic powder on their faces and breasts, the Palindis felt relief from the piercing arrows of Cupid. How is this kumkum, usually found on the breasts of women, found on the grass by the Palindis? Out of shyness, the gopis do not explain the reason in so many words, but the fact is that this kumkum came from the breasts of some of the gopis, those particular gopis who had succumbed to the allure of Krishna's Sankirtan and the song of Krishna's flute, had allowed him to seduce them. During their intimate pastimes, the kumkum had been transferred from their breasts to his lotus feet. Later, as Krishna walked through the forest, the same kumkum fell from his feet onto the grass and stones on the path. Apparently, Krishna was walking vigorously because the kumkum became firmly attached to the grass and stones. When the aboriginal women, foraging for wood and wild herbs, came to the same part of the forest, they discovered the kumkum. Why were the Palindis disturbed by lust? Seeing the kumkum on the ground reminded them first of Krishna, and then of his intimate affairs with the gopis. Thinking about these things agitated their minds. The word smada, which is in this verse, can be understood to mean either remembrance or Cupid. And how were the aboriginal women relieved of this agitation? By picking up the red powder and smearing it on their faces and breasts, which were burning with lust. Having done this, the Palindis felt completely satisfied. In contrast, the gopis speaking and hearing this account lament that they will never feel so satisfied. As implied by the words Shri, splendid, and Nandita, adorned, the kumkum became more beautiful by being smeared on the breasts of Krishna's beloved gopis, and even more effulgent by contact with Krishna's lotus feet. Though the Palindis normally have no beauty or glow in their faces, when they decorated their own bodies with this kumkum from the grass and stones, they became beautiful, effulgent, and free from the pain of lust. The gopi speaking means to say, we are condemned because we cannot become exalted like the aboriginal women. Or looking at the situation another way, because the blessed gopis are always immersed in the torment of separation from Krishna, they tend to presume that everyone else must be suffering the same way. And so the Pulindis too, they think, must now be suffering the pain of separation from Krishna. The limbs of the Pulindis were covered, poor Naha, with kumkum that looked exactly like the color of the soles of Sri Urugaya's lotus feet. So when the gopis saw the Pulindis, the gopis remembered how for Krishna's pleasure they themselves had first decorated their own breasts with that same kumkum. Because the color of that kumkum resembled the hue of Krishna's feet, the gopis used to like to use it. Another explanation is possible. The wonderful music of Krishna's flute had drawn the gopis into the forest to wander about searching for him. And when they couldn't find him anywhere, in the anguish of viraha bhava, they rolled on the ground, smearing the grass with the kumkum from their breasts. Later, when the Pulindis came, simply seeing the red powder made them remember Krishna and his dealing with the gopis, and they were stung by the arrows of Cupid. Thinking about the great love of the gopis, thinking about the great love the gopis have for Krishna, and recalling that this kumkum had been in contact with the gopis' bodies, the aborigines picked up some of the powder with great reverence and applied it to their faces. Then their own lust impelled them to smear it also on their breasts, but then they wiped this kumkum off their bodies and threw it away. Why? Because it caused them intense pain. They were already disturbed by lust just by seeing the kumkum, and when they touched it, their minds became thoroughly agitated. Then when they smeared it on their faces and breasts, the pain became so extreme that they quickly wiped the kumkum off and threw it away, afraid that otherwise they would come to a bad end. Alas, the gopi speaking complains, just like those Pulindis, we too are most unfortunate, cast into an ocean of intolerable pain. But just see how especially unlucky we gopis are. Just by touching the cosmetics from our bodies, people feel such misery that they throw the stuff away to protect their lives. So I just want to read one more thing here about the dust. This is also from a commentary on Brihad Bhagavatamrita. It's a commentary on a different verse, but in that verse there's the phrase padapangshu, which means the dust from Krishna's feet, padapangshu. So the commentary says, the meaning of the dust from Krishna's feet may be understood in several ways. It can mean a single atom of his feet. It can mean the marks of his footprints in the dust of Vrajabhumi. It can mean dust that has been in contact with his feet and then shaken off somewhere in his wanderings. Now this next sentence, I'm not quite sure what it means. But it can refer to anything that has been even indirectly in contact with his feet, no matter how far away. Yeah, so this is all, these are different meanings for the word padapangshu. Of course, we can understand also part this idea, the dust, it's interesting that we say dust because what's on your feet? Dirt. The dirt of Krishna's feet. Of course, in Braja, there's a lot of dust. You've walked around Braja. There are some places where really is dust. It's like powder, like thick powder. It's so fine, the dust. Of course, you also have sand and pebbles and so on. But the idea, I think, here is that, of course, first of all, I've seen Prabhupada mention this, that we talk about Krishna's feet always because that's a humble position. Even if you're talking about Krishna, all of Krishna, you say Krishna's feet because it's a humble way you're talking about his feet. So that what's the humblest thing is the dust from the dirt on the bottom of his feet. As you might say, is the most lowly part of Krishna. And even that is supremely worshipable. There's nothing greater than that. So that's, I think, the idea here where it says it can mean a single atom of his feet. So a single atom, an atom is so small, but it does not, like, you need a whole wheelbarrow full of that dust. Even a single atom of it can purify you and the whole universe. That's how valuable there's anything, and even a single atom of dust from Krishna's lotus feet. And of course, this sentence, which I said I didn't understand, but anything even indirectly connected with Krishna's feet, no matter how far away, that would seem to be everything there is in existence. I suppose if you see it that way, then you get the value of it. So in any case, this is a purport today about the desirability of the dust of Krishna's lotus feet in various forms. What verse again? We desire the same contact with the Supreme Lord's feet that the young women of Raja, the cowherd boys, and even the aborigine Pulinda women desire. The touch of the feet he leaves on the plants and grass as he tends his cows. I thought this phrase was interesting. The touch of the dust he leaves. Not the dust, but the touch of the dust. And that's, in other words, maybe it just means a slight touch. Sometimes we do a little bit, sometimes you say just a touch. So you just need a touch of it. You'll be purified. Let's see. So many hands. Madan Mohan was quick on the draw today.
Just a question, perhaps you could, in the six sastika prayers, it mentions, make me an atom.
Yeah.
So could you connect that in a sentence or two?
Ainanda tanuja kinkaram patita ma vishame babam buddha kripaya tava para pankaja stita duli sadrisham vichintaya. I guess, what's the word? Duli? I guess duli, yeah. Yeah, so there it says, I just want to be a particle of dust at your feet. So that's, again, that's the idea. I don't have to be on, you know, on your shoulders doing a piggyback ride like a cowherd boy. But even to be a particle of dust that you step on, that'll be fine. That'll be just fine. Actually, probably this was an ideal prayer, this prayer. I'm suffering in this material world and I just want to have contact with you somehow or other, Krishna. Pick me up. Even if it just means I'm stuck at the bottom of your feet, that's fine.
I was just thinking that indirectly and far away could mean the Ganga. She's flowing on the earth and purifies everybody. She came from the feet of Krishna.
Yeah.
But she's not directly connected with him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question. About the Arjuna unable to protect the wives of Krishna. But also in the 11th canto, the eight principal queens are shown to go do sati. You know, they burn themselves on the funeral pyres. That's how the 11th canto describes the passing of the eight queens of Krishna.
Mm.
But on the other hand, the 16,000 queens seem to be just whisked away by Krishna. So I don't know if you have a comment on that. But
of course, I guess what happens externally, it's basically irrelevant. Krishna makes different arrangements to remove his devotees. I was trying to think maybe there's some connection to this idea that in this Malshula Leela, when everyone was killing each other at Prabhas, it's said in the first canto that only the demigods and others whom Krishna had called to be part of his pastimes when he descended to earth, they're the ones who killed each other there. But his eternal associates remained in Dwarka. So I don't know if there may be some connection there, I'm not sure. But as far as I understand, actually, the 16,100 queens and the eight are all eternal associates of Krishna, so maybe that's irrelevant. But I didn't know that it says that they burned. Is there a purport to that verse? That they, maybe they're burning in the fire of separation? He comments like that. Okay, Janmashtami. I couldn't hear it very clearly. All right, hand on the mic. We're going to hear the source of this about the gopis burning themselves.
So Vishwanath Chakravarti explains everything nicely. So there is a very exhaustive explanation he gives. And also there are verses in that chapter. I think it's chapter 32 or something. which are a prelude to what's going to happen next. They warn you not to consider this as a material affair. Those verses too, explicitly. So Vishwanath Chakravarti.
10th canto.
11th, in the 11th
canto. Oh, before the Maushala Leela.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So it is set up nicely. But the interesting thing is that I found this on Wikipedia, where Wikipedia refers to Prabhupada's Vedabase in justifying that the eight queens burned themselves to death, which was outrageous to me, so I decided to go and check it out. And of course, that's how it is. But they don't provide the purports on Wikipedia, so everybody thinks that all these queens just, you know, it's all a mundane affair. It's kind of interesting.
A small point, but you know, in the Kirata Hunanda Pulinda Pulkasha verse, Pulinda is translated as Greeks.
Yeah, I was thinking of that.
Any thoughts on the, you know, the aboriginal women, and then Greeks?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't explain that one. I noticed that too. That probably translates it there as Greeks. Because Prabhupada was talking about different races in different parts of the world, the Turks, the Greeks. In that context, Belinda means the Greeks, and in another context, it means the Shubhas. Over Ragatmika.
It's probably a speculation, but that will work if the classifications, like Pulinda, if they describe the embodiment of a particular attribute or quality, which is, you know, commonly seen amongst the Greeks, but, you know, may also be present in other parts of the world.
And what is that quality? Living in the forest? As far as I understand, well, that's Pulinda's.
Yeah, at that time the Greeks were not.
That wouldn't be the Greeks, at least not according to Western ideas. They're the beginning of Western civilization.
Well, 5,000 years ago, then, you know.
Yeah, 5,000 years ago, who knows?
Prabhu, could you please clarify what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states about Krishna appearing as those infidel cowherd men, and how many?
Well, I could just read the sentence here.
Yes, okay.
After the Maushala Leela, these 16,000 queens were stolen from Arjuna on the road by Lord Krishna himself in the guise of 16,000 cowherds.
Okay.
So it was Krishna himself, disguised as cowherds, who took them away to Gokul. So I guess we can understand he's bringing them back into his, you know, uppercut Leela there in Vrindavan. It goes on eternally.
Also, you mentioned Viraha Bhav. What is that again?
Viraha is separation.
That's not Vipralamba?
Well, there are different words for the same thing. Yeah, it means the same thing.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else? Dimashmiva?
This came up in a couple classes ago, you know, what Gatmaka was talking about, you know, that first canto, 15th chapter, 20th verse, and there's the whole description of how these, there was a curse from, who was it? Angira Muni?
Oh, Angira Muni cursed the gopis.
Because he was crooked, and then they
laughed.
Yeah,
they laughed at him.
You'll get a husband, but then you'll lose him, and then
and
then they behaved themselves, so now you'll get him back. And so this is how they got him back. You know, the Krishna's cowherd stole them.
Yeah.
From Arjuna.
A lot of times they're backstories. All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.